This is the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcast. Podcast 379 is going to be a headphone podcast. I haven't done one with a lot of good sound in it in a while, and I got some pretty good sound on the road trip from Indiana through Ohio and Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia in a little bit more, and it's kind of all blurred together, a little bit more than a 24-hour period, including a visit to a small university town in Kentucky. And oddly enough, a chance visit to the National D-Day Memorial on D-Day's 71st commemoration in podcast 379. So traveling down here in the Mid-South to the South, it's actually warm, and it made me think of the global warming summer predicted by yours truly and Greg Ryan from Ryan Plumbing and Heating. He told me recently, you got to get these people ready for the global warming summer, which means checking the AC. Why would you check the AC? Well, if your AC is inefficient or it's not working properly, you're going to spend more money, and that's the main reason to do it. Sometimes they have to clean the coils on the outside. Sometimes they have to change the filters and things like that, and there may be things that you don't even know about. So it has to be over 70 for Ryan to check the AC, although they can do it at temperatures below 70. But it's starting to get warmer now in the Twin Cities, which means that Ryan Plumbing and Heating can check your AC. Here's the number to call in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, you call 612-927-6488. They are metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs, too, for four generations. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. And I just want to say, for those of you who own rental property, Ryan Plumbing and Heating is great for emergencies. If you have a plumbing emergency, they do a lot of that stuff. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing and Heating on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol, where they've always been. Again, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating to check your AC before it gets really hot and get ready for the global warming summer that must come, as well as emergency service. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. By the way, Ryan does go to the suburbs as well. You know, we always give two numbers, but they go, and it's just dates back to the days when different exchanges for different sides of the river. But Ryan goes to Plymouth, they go to Mendota, they go all over the place, and you've seen their trucks all over town. And thanks, Greg, for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. So here we are in, I think it's Berea, Kentucky. I could be wrong. It's spelled B-E-R-E-A. It could be Berea. I don't know. I didn't hear anybody name the town today here in Berea. It's just north of Boone, Kentucky, and I'm assuming the pronunciation, as I said. The middle of a long day of travel around 6 p.m. on June 5th. As I said, I finally found my summer here in the so-called Mid-South. It was really hot, and this is the end of a hot day walking up the street here at this little street fair that they had going. All day I had the AC and the mobile podcast command unit going. You see a lot of signs in Kentucky about Daniel Boone and Davy Crockett in Tennessee, and I always get confused about the two of those. This is a small town with a university. It is an old town section of the town here where this band was playing on the porch of an old cabin, which is somehow, I believe, related to the Boone family. And it's a reminder that this was once the frontier in America, much like parts of Alaska are today and will probably remain because Alaska is so rough. But at one time, Tennessee and Kentucky were pretty rough. Anyway, it's just nice to get out of the car to walk around. A lot of hippies here for this art street fair, including the Fire Eaters, who won't be starting their show until sundown. And a good assortment of people. You know, I've been stopping at all these truck stops along the way, and you see a lot of really fat people. I was sitting in a McDonald's the other night trying to upload a podcast and just saw one huge fat person after another come in. And this is just people from the town and some visitors like me, so it's a good mix. And here we are in a little farm-to-table restaurant that looks like a sit-down place. But as you look at the menu, it's pretty much sandwiches and salads and vegetarian and vegan stuff at that. And lately, I've had visions of sitting here having a big, thick, juicy steak, and I'm a little disappointed to walk into the farm-to-table restaurant and find out that there's no farm-to-table unless you're a vegan. The thing is, you know, with all the attention in this country politically focused on Iowa, you can almost forget as you walk out here into the street that there are lots of other really nice small towns all across this country. I can think of, Nevada City, California, parts of Reno, Cumberland, Maryland. Which actually, I think I told you this before last time I did a trip out east, Cumberland, Maryland used to be the second or third largest city in the United States, and so it's kind of, it's a real throwback. And of course, Nevada City was built in the 1850s as a mining town. And, you know, it's funny because as I'm walking down the street, I'm thinking in a few days I will have trouble remembering as I pass this thing, look at this giant popcorn popper. And there's a food truck up here, which is almost like the movie Chef. And I just am reminded at the staying power of classic rock. Here it is 2015, and we're listening to a song that's 45 years old, at least. But I will have trouble remembering all these places that I'm going to. People tell me that I should take copious notes about these trips and my observations, which is kind of what the podcasts are. But I kind of like the travel blur. You just get to the point where you can't remember where you were. It's almost like a dream, and you get names and towns wrong. I'll pass across the Tennessee border in a few hours and try to catch some sleep somewhere near Rocky Top and visit another small town tucked away in the Smokies called Bristol, Tennessee. And I think part of Bristol is also in Virginia, which they will say is recognized as the birthplace of country music. They even have a little museum there, and I will remember those places fondly, but I won't be too good at remembering specifically where they are. I almost don't want to think about that. I just want to remember it as a dream. And then as I pass into Virginia, I got a little surprise.
Well, this is a fitting way to end a long day of travel. This is Saturday, June 6th, 2015. The 71st or 70th?
Yeah.
The 71st anniversary of D-Day. So I got a little turned around, and I decided that in order to get where I needed to go, rather than going all the way up to Charlottesville and coming all the way back down to Richmond, I would just cut across the, I think it's the Blue Ridge Parkway. And oddly enough, it is June 6th, and here I am at the National D-Day Memorial. And it's funny, because on Memorial Day, I didn't really talk too much about D-Day and World War II, even though this May was the 70th anniversary of the end of hostilities in Europe, and we're coming up on VJ Day, which means victory over Japan, August 8th or 9th or 10th, whenever we signed the agreement with MacArthur and the Japanese at the end of the Pacific conflict. So D-Day was the beginning of the end, obviously, for the Germans, and then, of course, the whole Pacific theater. But I have been to the memorial at Normandy. I've been to Normandy. I've seen all the beaches at Normandy, toured that entire area. And the cemetery at Normandy is overwhelming. I've talked about it before. Clearly, the statement which they want you to walk away with is that the United States is unique among nations in that we invaded Europe. We came not to conquer, but to liberate. And then we went home. You know, we didn't really stay, even though we stayed. I mean, the whole idea of the U.S. foreign policy was to was to create governments, stable governments in Europe, and not to dominate or conquer Europe, even though technically that's what we did. But it's a unique situation in history because we didn't stay and occupy those countries permanently. And I think that's an important thing to point out. But here we are at the D-Day, the National D-Day Memorial, and I'm just going to stop talking because it's really quiet here. But there are people here. It's sundown, June 6, 2015, 71 years ago. It would have been nighttime by now on the very first day. And I will say a couple other things. Eisenhower almost pulled troops off of Dog Green, which is where the worst of it was. And if you ever get the chance to go there and tour that battlefield, I strongly recommend it, because people who study World War II will never really fully understand it until you realize how close they were to the guns on that hill, and how high that hill was, and how well-built those German bunkers were. The only way to get to them was you had to get around and get behind them. And it was really bad. And, of course, the current pushed everybody down to that little corner, and that's what caused a lot of the casualties. But when you go there and you actually see it, there's a little museum where you can actually go inside some of the German it's kind of hard to explain, but it's actually almost a diorama. So that you can climb inside a couple of these revetments, and you can, or not revetments, but whatever, the bunkers, and you can sort of see what they saw. And when you see what they saw, then you can understand why that was such an incredible feat for those U.S. troops to do what they did, at that beach. Farther up was Canada and Britain and another U.S. beach, and they just walked in. So there's a lot of misconceptions about D-Day in terms of what actually happened and where the casualties were, and I didn't understand it until I'd been there and seen, what the different beaches were like, because the other beaches were just straight up, you know, gold sand beaches, basically. That particular beach was rocky, and it was just cut down into a corner, and they weren't supposed to land there because of the defenses that were there. So that's a little bit of history on D-Day. There's a real large sort of arch that's kind of modern looking, and it says Overlord. And of course, that was the name of the operation that was kicked off on D-Day. And essentially was kicked off the night before with the dropping of airborne troops. Now we're in Bedford, Virginia, which is also the home, I believe, of Booker T. Washington. At least there's a museum here, as well as the National D-Day Memorial. So if you're ever passing through Bedford, it's up in the mountains, I think a little west of Roanoke, Virginia, on 81. But if you come here to Bedford, there's also a bunch of plaques for, Sons of Virginia that were also lost at D-Day. So it's kind of a state, or I should say Commonwealth, kind of a Commonwealth of Virginia memorial here as well. And it's interesting, the D-Day memorial is very solemn today. There's a lot of chairs here, but there aren't a lot of people. There's some old folks and some young folks and some people from the Army band and the park rangers. But it's very quiet and fitting. The way they designed this memorial is to kind of represent the English countryside as well as all the beaches and all the people who had anything to do with it. But it's interesting because I got to tell you, it kind of tugged at my heart to be at this memorial tonight, because you don't hear too much about World War II and D-Day these days. And I think that if there's a takeaway about this particular time in U.S. history, you hear a lot of people these days talk about the fact that military service is not a shared sacrifice, and that the American people are too busy with peaceful pursuits and they don't understand what is being done for them by service personnel, and the solution to this is the draft. And You know, it was funny because Steve, my dad, my friend Andy's dad, and most people in my age group, our fathers served in World War II or Korea, but it was mostly World War II. And my thought and impression was two things. First of all, if you talk to people in that generation, many of whom are passing as we speak, you'll find out that this was an incredibly difficult period of time for America, for the United States, for the people in the whole world. Everyone sacrificed. And it's not something that they necessarily would want to wish on us. My experience has been that they did it so that we wouldn't have to make that kind of a sacrifice. And I've said it more than once about World War II. We almost lost World War II. It all telescopes very nicely, and I've said this before, when you read history, it seems like everything was a fait accompli, but they didn't know what the outcome was going to be between 1942 and 1945, and they weren't even sure at that point. They didn't know what the world was going to look like at that point. And it's a tremendous amount of sacrifice by many, many people. Almost everyone lost someone or two someones in that war in some way, shape, or form. And my sense is that that generation really didn't want us to experience that. And I think that they were pretty happy to move to suburbia and stand in the backyard and drink martinis and cook steaks and enjoy the fruits of victory, so to speak, if they were able to make it. I don't know how I feel about the shared sacrifice, but I can tell you that when you come to a memorial like this and you see, basically, you see it empty, it does tug at your heart. It's something that's important. And I wonder how many people sat for a moment and said, gee, this is the 71st anniversary of, I hate to say anniversary, but commemoration of D-Day. We talked a little bit about the end of World War II on Memorial Day, and there's even confusion about Memorial Day, which is a day to remember those who have died in service, military service to the country. It's not a day to thank people for their service, although you're welcome to thank people for their service any day. But it's a special day set aside for those who were killed. So it's kind of a fitting end to the trip to be here at the National D-Day Memorial on D-Day, which was completely something that happened by chance. And that's the whole thing about traveling, is that, you know, if you're able to sit back. This has been a weird trip because, first of all, East Coast and moving east in this country, the travel distances are very short. You know, this was a day where I slept in a parking lot at a Bob Evans in Ohio and made my way down into Kentucky through Lexington and then parts east. And, you know, the travel distance between Cincinnati and Indianapolis, where I was last night, is only about 150 to 200 miles, as I recall. It's very short. So the travel distances are shorter, and you feel like you're, you know, going a lot further when you're really not. So it's kind of a weird, and I've been poking along and stopping, and it has made me tired, and I'm kind of frustrated with things, you know, just kind of getting used to things going bad in a Mercury retrograde. And then you start to kind of relax and calm down and just kind of go with the flow, and things happen like, oh, here I am at the D-Day Memorial. And there was no, you know, I turned to come to the D-Day Memorial by chance because I was making my way across Virginia and I needed to get to Richmond, and I wasn't going to go all the way up to Charlottesville. But again, as you look through the news this weekend, you're again seeing all this focus in the political world on Iowa, and all this focus in the entertainment world on the former Bruce Jenner, whose name is now Caitlyn Jenner. And I'm amazed at the people who are actually attempting to write learned articles about why we should, you know, give Jenner an award, or all these different things about transgenderism and those against it and those for it. And it's just silly. And as I drive across the country, once again, I'm just impressed with the fact that this country is huge and there are lots of places in this country. And who can say, looking in from the outside, what these people really think and how they really feel about it? Every town has a little downtown center that's kind of hippie land. Bristol, Virginia, or Tennessee, I can't remember what part of the state, which state it was,
has a little downtown section, and there's, you know, the usual vegetarian restaurants and coffee places. And then there are the suburban outer places where all the pole barns are and the guys who do body shop work and things like that, and the trailer parks and the really nice neighborhoods. And it's really hard when you're traveling to say, these people think this way. And we spend a lot of time in this country pegging people into categories. So now we're just kind of sitting on the steps out here in Virginia by the screened-in porch. It is really full summer here. If you're from the upper Midwest, this feels like full summer. The trees are incredibly full. It is night. The moon is not up yet. The tree frog is going crazy. Can hear the wind chimes and some conversation through the screen doors next door. And I'm really glad that I'm not sitting in front of a television watching Fox News or CNN or MSNBC. And I'm really glad that I'm not sitting on the porch with my laptop opened up on my knees looking at today's insanity on the Drudge Report. And I'm really glad that I'm not having a conversation with somebody about Caitlyn Jenner and whether or not he, she, whatever, should win an award. And I'm really glad that I'm not just steeped in all this. Here's what this one said, and here's what that one said. And I hope that you're not doing that, because listen to what's going on in the world right now. And if you spend winters way up north, this is a time to just drink this in. This is not a time to be sitting in the den watching the latest outrage. I think we do that too much in this country. I think, you know, you visit the truck stops across America, as I said, many times, and you're just bombarded with bad country music and the televisions that are on and the games that are sitting there at every table. And we're constantly allowing ourselves to be bombarded with all of this energy and media. And I can tell you, you know, because I look at the political stuff every day. I mean, obviously, I'm printing it and reading it because I need to think about what I am reading and seeing and what people are saying. I don't want to just have it shoved down my throat and into my brain. I want to go, why did they say that? You know, maybe is that an argument that I should think about? How should I think about that argument? But I can tell you, in my view, all the things being said right now, and this is for the political people. I'm saying this. It's very hard to mix the travel stuff with, because it's so great. The energy is so great. Your energy is way up in the air when you're traveling because you're seeing new things and you're experiencing new things. So it's really hard to mix it with these lower energy events, which are really all for the media. Whether it's a motorcycle ride in Iowa for the 15th time, these people, you know, God knows how many candidates on the Republican side transversing Iowa and making speeches. None of what they say, none of what they do right now is going to have any impact on anyone else but the bundlers and the super intense political people who I really pity right now, because in the midst of this beautiful weather that we're starting to get, the fine weather is coming, they're out there and they love it, and they do it because they love it, but they're out there, and people who are watching it and hanging on every word and have picked it, their favorite candidate a full year before this thing begins in earnest, and where we'll actually fish and cut bait at some point next summer. So I will tell you that my experience is that very little of what happens now will make any difference a year from now. And yet, we're being told about these things as though they are a hurricane, as though they are a war, as though it's a bank being robbed, as though this is news. And it's not. It's just some people who have this sort of legitimacy
that being a quote-unquote political candidate, a presidential candidate, really, again, I don't know how often I can say this, they're running for the nomination. So what they're doing right now is they're actually looking for delegates. They're talking to politically involved people, and they're looking for donors. They're not running for president right now. They're running for a nomination. And they're also running, I believe, especially on the Republican side, to improve their street cred and their portfolio. And most of them have no intention of being president. And some of them would be shocked to find out that they perhaps had enough votes to actually become president. I'll leave you to figure out which one. So nothing that they do right now really is directed toward the country as a whole. It's directed to the politicals, and most of the politicals in Iowa, quite literally, and maybe to a lesser extent, New Hampshire. So much of this effort is focused on, as I said in a previous podcast, a really sparsely populated, really spread out when it comes to population, state who have made politics a tourist attraction. That's really what is going on. And it's an effort for these people to get credibility at the diner and everything else. And it's very frustrating to me to talk about this stuff at a time when, you know, there's this incredible green summer unfolding before us. And you just want to sit out here on the steps and enjoy it. So from here, the plan is to head deeper into rural Virginia, where I'm going to get some more really great summer sound. And then we're going to go west to a place near Buena Vista, Virginia. And then I'm going to go down to Virginia Beach and Newport News. The mobile podcast command unit has to hit the Atlantic coast. Since I travel to PCH, I have to hit Route 1, and I have to get some pictures of the mobile unit on the Atlantic coast. And I really want to get some sun. I need sun, and I'm going to hang out on the beach for a couple of days. And then back up to Washington, D.C., and we'll see what we can get there. And then home to the Midwest from there. So thank you for listening to Podcast 379, the Bob Davis Podcast, sponsored by Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Don't forget to get your AC checked. It's going to get hot. And, you know, even if you know that it works because you've had it on, if it's not working right, you're going to get a huge bill, and they can help you with efficiency. So talk to Ryan Plumbing about checking your AC, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul in Minneapolis. You call 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul, and that means the suburbs too. And of course, that means that you'll see them in Plymouth, and you'll see them in Mendota, as I mentioned, and you'll see them in Maple Grove and places all over the metropolitan area and in Eden Prairie, because you see the trucks. So don't forget to call Ryan Plumbing also for emergencies. They do a great job with that. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Got to thank the digital sponsor of the BobDavisPodcast.com. And for those of you that wonder what this is a special package that I have for clients to just put their ads on the Bob Davis Podcast page. Originally, the podcast page was just created to hold the podcasts, and it's kind of funny because it's now becoming a destination for people. They spend some time on the page, so it's a pretty good advertising venue. And Mad Case Studios is one of the long-term sponsors of the Bob Davis Podcast's digital side. And what does Mad Case do? They create quality, original automotive artwork. Maybe you have a favorite car, or you have a work truck or something. You want to get a painting of it. It's not a photograph, and that's what makes it unique. They're going to be out at some of these antique auto shows this summer. Look for information about that. Click on the banner for more information about Mad Case Studios and all the sponsors of the BobDavisPodcast.com. And thanks to you guys for listening on the page at the Bob Davis Podcasts on blogtalkradio.com. Tune in Stitcher.com or iTunes. And thanks for liking, sharing, and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. On Instagram, I'm bdavis7843, by the way. Thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcasts.com. If you are interested in making a donation, you can do it safely and securely through PayPal. Look for the picture of the mobile podcast command unit. The whole thing is crowdfunded, pretty much. And so when I'm out cruising around dumping diesel fuel into this thing, which, by the way, is pretty cheap right now, which is kind of cool, but I still have to fill up. Also, occasionally I need another bag of Komodo Dragon coffee, because I'm drinking a lot of coffee. So that's what the donations are going for. And thank you guys for doing that, especially Bernadette from, I think, South Dakota. Thank you for making that great donation. And I always appreciate whatever you guys want to do if you want to do it. You just click on the big yellow donate button. And thank you most of all for sharing and downloading and taking the feed at thebobdavispodcast.com or iTunes or listening to it on TuneIn, blogtalkradio.com or Stitcher.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 379. I'm going to leave you with something that happened again by accident when I was at the D-Day Memorial, and it'll give you a chance to just think a little bit about that day so many years ago, June 6th, 1944, and this is the 71st commemoration, June 6th, 2015. So I'm going to leave you with just a really chilling accident that happened for me to just get this on tape. It was really great.